Randy and Billy splashed forward. Others, three or four drawn by the shouts and splashing, most still from the third-floor Hearts group, took hold of Stoke as well. We turned him awkwardly, probably looking like the world's most spastic cheerleading squad, for some reason out practicing in the downpour. Stoke had quit struggling. He lay in our grip, arms hanging out to either side, palms up and filling with little cups of rain. Diminishing waterfalls ran out of his sodden jacket and from the seat of his pants. "He picked me up and carried me," Carol had said, talking about the boy with the crew cut, the boy who had been her first love. "All the way up Broad Street on one of the hottest days of the year, he carried me in his arms." I couldn't get her voice out of my head. In a way, I never have. "The dorm?" Ronnie asked Skip. "We taking him into the dorm?" "Jeepers, no," Nate said. "The infirmary." Since we'd managed to get him out of the water, that was the hardest part, and it was behind us. The infirmary made sense. It was a small brick building just beyond Bennett Hall, no more than 300 or 400 yards away. Once we got off the path and onto the road, the footing would be good. So we carried him to the infirmary, bore him up at shoulder height like a slain hero being ceremonially removed from the field of battle. Some of us were still laughing in little snorts and giggles. I was one of them. Once I saw Nate looking at me as if I were a thing almost below contempt, and I tried to stop the sounds that were coming out of me. I'd do okay for a little while. Then I'd think of him spinning on the pivot of his crutch. "The Olympic judges give him all tens," and I'd start in again. Stoke only spoke once as we carried him up the walk to the infirmary door. "Let me die," he said. "For once in your stupid, greedy, me lives, do something worthwhile. Put me down and let me die."